On episode 437 of the 40 Plus Fitness podcast, we meet James Nestor and discuss his book, Breathe, The New Science of a Lost Art. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/437.
Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness? The 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is here for you. I'm your host, Alan Meisner. I'm an NSAM certified personal trainer with a specialization in corrective exercise and fitness nutrition. Let me be your coach as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go.
This episode of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is sponsored by SaveTheChildren.org. COVID-19 has been devastating for many of us, but no one is more affected than children. It has left many children without caregivers, out of school, and exposed to violence and exploitation. We used to be winning the battle on poverty, but now poverty is rising, especially for children. Save the Children believes every child deserves a future. In the United States and around the world, they work every day to give children a healthy start in life, the opportunity to learn, and protection from harm. With your support, Save the Children can help children in unsafe households and help support distance learning in the face of school closures. Here's some ways your support can make a difference. $10 can nourish an out-of-school child in need for one day, including breakfast, lunch, and dinner. $35 can provide educational toys and activities to engage eager out-of-school learners. $50 can deliver essentials to keep kids learning while out of school, like books, activities, and supplies. Go to SaveTheChildren.org/SaveKids to help save the children in this time of unprecedented need. Did you know we have a 40 Plus Fitness Facebook group? We have weekly challenges, motivational and educational material, and I share things I find interesting and fun. Spend time with like-minded 40 Plus Fitness Podcast listeners. Join us at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/group. Our guest today has written for Outside, Scientific American, The Atlantic, Dwell, The New York Times, and many other publications. His book, Deep, Free Diving, Renegade Science, and What the Ocean Tells Us About Ourselves, was a finalist for the 2015 Penn ESPN Award for Literary Sports Writing and Amazon Best Science Book of 2014 and more. He has appeared on dozens of national television shows, including ABC's Nightline and CBS's Morning News, and on NPR. With no further ado, here's James Nestor. James, welcome to 40 Plus Fitness.
Thanks a lot for having me.
So today we're going to talk about your book, Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art. And I have to say that particularly in the last 4 or 5 years, there's been like kind of a reawakening on how important breath and breath work is.
Oh, I would say definitely. And I was lucky enough to sort of jump into that scene right as things were really gestating in the scientific communities.
And so, yeah, so we're hearing, about monks. You talk about in the book, monks that can basically change their heart rate. They can change the temperature. They can do that just with breath. There's Wim Hof, which is, he's just a fascinating individual. And again, you get into him in the book. But I think really where I want to go with this conversation is to talk a little bit more about how we can use breath in an everyday sense to just manage our overall health and well-being.
Sure. And I think that so many people view breath as something that's binary. It's either about doing it, which is good, which means you're alive, or not doing it, which is very bad, which means you're dead. But it's the subtleties and the nuances of breathing that are so fascinating to me, because they're such a clear reflection of how efficiently our bodies are working, how our minds are functioning, nervous system, organ function, heart rate, mental state, on and on and on. And from what I found from years of being in this world and researching with these scientists is how we breathe is as important as what we eat, how much we exercise, and all that other stuff. It's really a missing pillar of health.
It is. As I was getting into the book, and I was thinking, when do I ever actually think about breathing other than one, when I can't, because I've got, you know, I'm stuffed up or congested or have a cold or flu. I think about breathing a lot. And then when I'm doing meditation and we're focused on breath, is pretty much the two times that I find myself most focusing on breath. And I guess maybe the third would be when I'm lifting weights or running or doing something like that, where how I breathe matters with regards to performance. In the South, I don't know if this is everywhere. I guess it is everywhere. But there's this kind of moniker of calling someone a mouth breather. And it's not a nice thing to say to someone or say about someone, calling them a mouth breather. But beyond just the fact that it's, you know, you're calling them out on something, there is something really, really wrong with breathing out of your mouth. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. And, you know, that is a derogatory term that people have bandied around, and for good reason. Breathing out of your mouth is extremely unhealthy, and it will even, after a while, start affecting how you look, the skeletature of your face, and it will be start affecting how often you snore, whether or not you get sleep apnea. And there's just this laundry list of problems associated with mouth breathing. Because what happens when we breathe through our mouth is we're taking in unfiltered, unheated, and raw air. This saps us of moisture, it irritates the lungs, and loosens the soft tissues at the back of the mouth. So the more we mouth breathe, the more we're going to mouth breathe in the future. And mouth breathing has been even associated with neurological disorders, periodontal disease, increased risk of respiratory infection, and on and on and on. There's been several studies looking at the difference of mouth breathing and nasal breathing in animals. And one Japanese study showed that mice who had their noses plugged took twice the amount of time to make their way through a maze. They've also found in human studies that when we breathe through our mouth, there's a disturbance of oxygen in our prefrontal cortex. So this is the area of the brain that's associated with ADHD. So very clear correlations between how we're breathing in this air, the pathway in which we're breathing it, and how we're functioning. So there's a bunch of other physiological effects to that as well, but it's bad news across the board. And what's even worse news is that about 50% of the population, according to one estimate, says that we are chronic mouth breathers. And humans are the only species to really suffer from this affliction. So if you look at 5,400 different mammals on the planet, they are breathing through their noses. Yeah, dogs are going to be breathing through their mouths, but that's for thermoregulation. They're not doing it for any other reason beyond that. Some people have told me, they're like, well, you know, my bulldog breathes through the mouth, or my pug breathes through the mouth, but these highly inbred dogs have essentially become similar to the way humans have become, where we've lost this ability to breathe through our nose. So we have just adapted to breathing through our mouth, and it's caused all kinds of problems.
Yeah. And you personally experienced some of these problems by going through this kind of a crazy experiment of 10 days as a mouth breather. Can you talk about that experiment? Because that was really interesting and a little bit scary.
Yeah. So we know all of these problems are associated with mouth breathing. We just don't know how quickly they turn on. So no one's really studied this. So I was able to convince, I don't know how, but I was able to do it, the chief of rhinology research at Stanford. I had done a few interviews with him over the past several months and finally hatched this idea. I said, well, why don't we test this? Why don't we plug my nose with silicon balls and put some tape over it, and we can do data panels, we can do pulmonary function test, we can look at my cortisol levels, on and on and on, 60 different markers, and we can compare them to nasal breathing afterwards. So for 10 days, me and another subject, a breathing therapist of all people, a Swedish breathing therapist, one of the best breathers in the world, we made him one of the worst. And so for 10 days, we just breathed through our mouths and tried to live our regular lives. You know, this wasn't so much of a supersize me stunt, because what we were doing was placing our bodies into a state that most people have experienced and up to half of us experience regularly. So it's a feeling and a certain level of functioning that we already really know. So, you know, it was the data came out and proved everything that the ancients have been saying for thousands and thousands of years, that mouth breathing is just really, really bad news. Both of us started snoring the first night. Snoring increased about 1,300%. It got worse and worse until I was snoring 4 hours throughout the night. We got sleep apnea. We were stressed. We were fatigued. I mean, all of the above. What was so interesting to me about all this was not the damage inflicted during mouth breathing. It was what happened when we took out these plugs and just breathed through our noses for the next 10 days, where all those problems went away. This wasn't just subjective. You know, we were recording everything the whole time, and it was a complete transformation by just changing the channel through which we breathe.
And it was really, really quick, just a matter of a couple of days that you were seeing. You're suddenly, it's like, I'm feeling horrible. I'm about to die. And then you change over to nose breathing actually. And within a day or two, it's like you're not fully recovered, but you feel drastically different. Your life is drastically different. You're sleeping so much better. No snoring or less snoring down to no snoring. Sleep apnea goes away. So it is reversible.
For sure. You know, we went from snoring up to 4 hours during our worst state of mouth breathing to snoring within that first night, snoring 7 minutes. And then I wasn't snoring at all a couple of days after. So you realize how malleable and how flexible the body is, depending on what inputs you give to it. So to us, this was just a clarification and context on what the ancients have been saying for literally thousands of years. There's this one quote from the Chinese Tao that's 1,200 years old. It says, the breath inhaled through the mouth is called Ni Qi, adverse breath, which is extremely harmful. Be careful to not have the breath inhaled through the mouth. So people were saying this, you know, over 1,000 years ago, and it seems to be mostly lost on modern populations. If you look around, a lot of people are habitually mouth breathing, and it's bad news.
This episode of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is also sponsored by Lumen. Lumen's handheld device measures your metabolism in real time using your breath. Once only available to professional athletes, it is now available to you. Lumen will tell you if your body is using carbs or fat for fuel. It then provides you with personalized meal plans and insights to help you reach your weight and fitness goals. When we burn fat, we breathe most of it out. The Lumen handheld device will give you the data on that. I love data, especially when it helps us get healthier and more fit. Lumen is working to improve the world's metabolic health and quality of life one breath at a time. Go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/Lumen, LUMEN, and use the code 40fitnesspodcast25 to get $25 off. Visit 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/Lumen and be sure to use the code 40fitnesspodcast25 to get that wonderful listener discount. I'll be sure to have a link and the code in the show notes at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/437. So beyond why mouth breathing is bad, let's talk about why nose breathing is actually good and you know, some things about the nose that make it that way.
Sure. And this is the fun part, right? So once you injure yourself, you can try to rebuild yourself through various means. And we simply changed the pathway through which we were breathing. So we were no longer breathing through our mouths. We instead put a little piece of tape on our mouths to remind us to keep our mouths shut. Obviously, we'd open them to eat and to talk on occasion, but for the large part, we were breathing only through our noses. And breathing through the nose will save you about 40% moisture. So that's one reason, especially while jogging, to always breathe through the nose, unless you want to be carrying around those silly water bottles, which nobody wants to do. Also, breathing through the nose will increase nitric oxide by sixfold. Nitric oxide, I'm sure a lot of your listeners know what this is, but a quick little recap. It's a molecule that plays an essential role in circulation and delivering oxygen into cells. By just breathing through your nose, you can have a massive increase of nitric oxide. They're using nitric oxide now to treat patients with COVID. It's that effective at opening capillaries and increasing oxygenation. We have a natural supply of this in our nasal passages. All we need to do is breathe through our nose.
And just for the record, Viagra increases nitric oxide. That's why it does what it does. So breathing through the nose is
better. That's true. That's true. And if you want to hum, you can increase that nitric oxide at least 15-fold by humming. So that might be something, you know, you're out on a date, things are heating up, something you might want to consider doing on the way home.
Okay. I was actually just kind of blown away when you got into the structure of the nose and all that, and how it's, you know, people just think, okay, it's just a, like a vent and then it's just taking in air, but it's not actually just taking in air. It's causing it to do some things like circulate through there a little bit differently. It's warming it up. It's filtering it. It's doing all those really good things before it gets to our lungs.
For sure. I mean, this is a natural filter. It's our first line of defense against pathogens and bacteria. So nitric oxide will attack a lot of that stuff, but so will the natural filter of our noses. And if you would open a human nose up, it's pretty amazing to look at. You can find this on the internet or in an anatomy book, but it looks just like a conch shell, because, and that's where it gets its name, nasal concha. So, and it's designed that way, the same way that seashells are designed to keep invaders out. So we also have that function in our nose. What I found, what was so ironic is you look at the National Institutes of Health, and there are 17 different departments investigating everything from skin to lungs, to the heart, to the brain, on and on, but none of them are looking at the functions of the nose, the importance of the nose in health and in longevity. So beyond that filtering, the nose also adjusts our levels of stress. It can calm us down. It can get us amped up. And that is determined by which nostril you're breathing through. So the nose is covered with this erectile tissue, which is the same erectile tissue in our genitals. And it responds to the same inputs. So whenever we get excited in one area, the nose will respond as well. And what happens throughout the day, every 30 minutes to about every 4 hours, the pathway through which air comes in through your nose, either your right nostril or your left nostril, is going to switch. So one nostril is going to gently close and the other is going to gently open up. And one of the reasons it does this, some of this is theoretical, but a lot of it has been checked out and verified by scientists, is that when we breathe through the right nostril, we heat the body up. So the heart rate increases, we get a little drip of cortisol, blood pressure increases as well. And if we switch that pathway to the left nostril, the body cools down, heart rate decreases, blood pressure decreases, the heart lowers. Heart rate lowers. So you can use this throughout the day, depending on what you're doing. There's a whole school in yoga that studies this and that practices these alternate nostril breathings. But you don't need to do that, because your body naturally does this, and it adjusts throughout the day and throughout the night.
So we know that our body brings in oxygen and then basically expels carbon dioxide. That's kind of the cycle of what's happening here. One of the interesting things that I got from your book was that it's not about the amount of oxygen that we take in that matters. It's about the amount of carbon dioxide we have in our blood that needs to get out, that actually keeps that thing working well. And if we don't have the carbon dioxide, we're not going to use the oxygen we're breathing in. So breathing slow and breathing less can actually work to our benefit. Can you get into that?
For sure. And this is something that's been misinterpreted and still is today, is for a healthy body, and that is for somebody who has about 95% or higher of oxygen in your bloodstream at any one time, you don't need more oxygen. So you have plenty of oxygen in your body. What you need is a way of offloading that oxygen efficiently into your cells and tissues and muscles. And that's what carbon dioxide helps us do. So carbon dioxide is you know, in a lot of circles, considered a very bad thing. It's the stuff that plumes out of coal plants and that's heating up the planet, and all that's true. But for your body, it's essential to have the right balance of carbon dioxide and oxygen so it can work at peak efficiency. And often when we breathe too much, we are off-gassing too much carbon dioxide. So our bodies enter into an alkaline state, which makes it harder for oxygen to enter into these tissues and muscles and do what our body naturally wants us to do. So when you see people at the gym or jogging or wherever, when they're breathing through their mouths and they're thinking they're getting a good workout, they're actually doing the opposite. So they're not burning any more fat. They're making their body work harder to do less. So for the vast majority of people, breathing less is going to give you more oxygen. And it's going to do that by keeping your carbon dioxide levels balanced. Now, there's extremes to this, right? Somebody with COVID or pneumonia or emphysema doesn't get enough oxygen in their bloodstream. They need oxygen if they're below 90, especially if they're in the 80s. But again, for healthy people, having extra oxygen isn't going to do anything, which is why I find it so ironic with these oxygen bars. You have these people, oh, we're going to help you out. You're healthy. We're going to make you feel even better. It's not doing anything. Mm-hmm. What you need to do is allow your body to do what it naturally wants to do. You can breathe slowly and get much more benefit from doing that. You can also save a lot more money.
So in some of the breathing that you talked about, you actually talked about a breathing rate of 5.5 per minute being kind of a sweet spot.
Yeah. So these researchers about 20 years ago were looking at different prayers. They were looking at Catholic prayers, the Rosary, the Ave Maria. They were looking at the Buddhist chant, Om Mani Padme Hum, the Kundalini chant of Sata Nama. And they found that to vocalize each of these, it takes about 5 to 6 seconds. And then there's about 5 to 6 seconds to inhale. So you're inhaling for about 5 to 6 seconds, and you're exhaling for about 5 to 6 seconds. So they got a bunch of subjects and they hooked them up to all these sensors, and they looked at what was happening to their brains and bodies when they breathed this way. And they found that blood flow increased in the brain, circulation increased, and the body entered a state of coherence where the heart, nervous system, and everything else were coordinated at peak efficiency. So this really lessened the burden on the heart and allowed us to do more again with less. It was just by breathing in this way. And they hypothesized that the healing effects of prayer were probably real, but it had more to do with how we were breathing than what we were saying. And since this discovery, I guess you could call it, various scientists and researchers and psychiatrists have used this breathing pattern in their patients with depression, anxiety, and even to purge toxins from the lungs and with 9/11 survivors. So it's free. It's easy. Anyone can do it. And the effects they feel great, you know, and it's backed up by science. So I try to breathe in this way as often as possible. Sometimes I have timers around. And even when I'm working out, if I'm at a gym on a stationary bike and I'm really huffing and puffing, I try to slow my breathing to about 6 or 7 breaths per minute, which sounds like, how are you possibly getting enough oxygen to support yourself? But I've worn a pulse oximeter and found that my oxygen level did not waver when I was breathing this slowly. So that's a way of really, if you're nervous, you're not getting enough oxygen, that you're breathing too slowly, try to get a pulse ox. You can get these things for $20 and try it out if you're geeky like me. But I was really blown away by this because I had always learned that the more you breathe, the more oxygen you're going to gain. You need that oxygen to go further and to work out harder. And that's complete BS. You don't. You need to breathe in line with your metabolic needs, which for the vast majority of us is to breathe more slowly.
Yeah, because we're going to bring in enough oxygen into our lungs with that breath to be able to go for another minute or two. Actually, if we wanted to hold our breath, there's a guy, he married the volleyball player Gabriella. His name's Laird. He was a surfer.
Yeah, Laird Hamilton.
Yeah, Laird. Sure. Okay, yeah. He's got this protocol where they actually work out underwater. You know, they're lifting weights and mm-hmm. running underwater, so they're not breathing, you know, once in maybe a minute. And, you know, from what I've heard, it's pretty amazing stuff, performance improvements you can get when you start training your body to work that way. So a little different thing out there, but, you know, we don't have to breathe every 2 seconds just to make sure we have oxygen. We can go with less.
Yeah. And that protocol has been around for 70 years that Laird is using. So, you know, scientists have known this for a long time. We had known about carbon dioxide's benefits in the body for 100 years. Some prominent scientists, Christian Bohr, discovered this, and then Yandell Henderson at Yale was a big promoter of the use of carbon dioxide, both in tanks and in our own bodies, to allow us to function efficiently. He said this is something that's completely ignored by the medical community. What's ironic is they were doing these tests in the 1910s, 1920s, and arguing that more people need to get hip to what's going on with these gases and to know their real benefits. And then today, you still have a lot of misinformation and a lot of ignorance as far as how oxygen and carbon dioxide are used in human metabolism. And so it was fascinating to go through all of these medical stories and articles and studies and to see these things played out over again and again and again. People keep discovering this stuff and then it disappears. They discover it and it disappears. So what Laird is doing is part of a long tradition of conditioning the body to use oxygen more efficiently. And we do that by breathing less.
I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be. What are three strategies or tactics to get and stay well?
I would argue that breathing is at the core of this, along with eating well and exercising. So I'd throw in sleeping. You know, this isn't the most original, you know, list you've ever heard, I'm sure.
Well, you started with breathing, so that's a little bit more original than most, but yeah.
I guess. But if you look at the holy triumvirate of wellness, of longevity, of feeling good every day, it's those three things. But breathing has to be considered in here, because I've met so many people who are triathletes, who go to the gym every day, who eat, you know, only a keto diet or vegan diet, whatever, but they are not paying attention to their breathing. They have sleep apnea. They snore at night. They say, oh, this is just, you know, this is natural. Everyone I know snores. Everyone I know has sleep apnea, but it's not. You have to get control of that before, in my opinion, before you really double down on your food and your exercise. You have to be looking at how you're breathing, because we breathe 25,000 times a day. And if you're doing that wrong, you're going to be injuring your body just a little bit with each breath. So you need to get that right. And then you can build upon that foundation and really share in good health after that.
Well, thank you, James. The book is awesome. You're not just giving us information. You're actually walking us through the story of you finding a lot of this stuff. So it's a really cool read. I really enjoyed it. If someone wanted to learn more about you or learn more about the book Breathe, where would you like for me to send them?
My website and all the links to the book are there as well. There are 550 scientific references with some videos and photos and a bunch of other stuff to support what sounds like a bunch of pseudoscience. It's all real stuff, people. All the data is up there on my website at mrjamesnestor.com.
Now you can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/437, and I'll be sure to have the links there. So James, thank you so much for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness.
Thanks a lot for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Remember to check us out on Facebook, 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/group. Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Tom Holland and discuss his book, The Micro Workout Plan. Get the body you want without the gym in 15 minutes or less a day. Until then, have a happy and healthy week.